Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It's been a long campaign and a momentous election. Now it's over. Now the country is taking on board the results and looking ahead. And we're checking in with citizens who shared their views with us along the campaign trail, getting their takes on the election and the future of the country. This hour, On Point, regular citizens, old friends from the campaign trail, tell us how they see the outcome now, President-elect Obama, and the way ahead. You can join the conversation. Whatever your political stripe, what do you see ahead for the country as we leave these elections behind? How are you sizing up this moment and its possibilities? It's a little like old home week here. Joining me first from Denver, Colorado, is John Scheffler. He's 50, married with three children, owns the Orning Glass Company in Ames, Iowa. He joined us way back in January before the Iowa caucuses. He supported Mike Huckabee then, voted for John McCain. John Scheffler, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Been a long time.
Yes, it has. It's really good to have you. Thank you. From Indianapolis, Indiana, is Deb Peters, small businesswoman, joined us just last month to talk about the financial crisis and the campaign. She's a registered Republican, but regularly votes for candidates from both parties. This time, she too voted for McCain. Deb, welcome back. Good to have you.
Thanks for having me back, Tom.
From Waterville, Maine, Susan Merkelson is here, 21-year-old senior at Colby College, editor-in-chief of the Colby Echo. She joined us just last month to talk politics and the youth vote, voted for Barack Obama. Suzanne, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
And with us from Raleigh, North Carolina, is Brad Thompson. He runs an advocacy agency for nonprofits, 60 years old, four kids, African-American. We met Brad at the Democratic National Convention, where he was a delegate in Denver, voted for Obama. Brad Thompson, wonderful to have you back.
Thanks, Tom. It's good to be back with you.
Let me turn to you first, Brad, if I may. Tuesday's vote and how you're feeling now. You were very strong for Obama all the way back in the Mile High City. Did you ever doubt between then and now? The polls closed in a little bit for a while there. Did you ever doubt the outcome?
Well, you know, in Denver you asked me, was I worried? I said, well, the operative word was work, not worry. And I think we spent a lot of effort to try to help make North Carolina on the winning side of the electoral vote, and it appears we've been able to do that, and I'm very pleased with that.
What is the final outcome there? It was one of those pale blue states until very, very late. Has Obama now taken it? Is it in his category?
Well, the latest results indicated that he's up by about 20,000 votes in the state. They have the provisional ballots yet to count. Once they do that, I'm confident that he will be declared the ultimate victor.
John Scheffler, let me turn over to you in Denver. Of course, Iowa is home for you. You were hoping for Huckabee, and it ended up John McCain and Sarah Palin. Let me ask you first about how you felt about that ticket going in to Tuesday's vote. I think you voted early, like so many Americans did, but as you approached voting day, what did you make of McCain-Palin?
I just didn't think it was a strong ticket, and I think it would be difficult for any Republican to run this year and mount a successful campaign. But I think McCain's strategies and the people advising him basically did him in, and there was really no chance with a month to go.
You voted for him anyway. Did you ever think twice about that, about what column your presidential vote would be in?
Absolutely not. As I mentioned back in January, Tom, you know, my faith drives my decisions, and it is a rock-solid thing to me. And McCain, although he was not my personal choice, he represented my values more than the other options.
And when you say your faith, you mean Christian faith driving your decisions? What about Barack Obama on that score? He was famously kind of a man of the church himself, though that brought him some controversy as well as some supporters.
That's such an open. I have to laugh a little bit.
Sure.
I, I think that's such an open topic, and I don't think we have 3 or 4 hours to discuss that. But I think what's going to be really interesting is, where does Obama lead from? Does he lead from the center, or does he lead from the left? And if he leads from the left, there's a lot of issues that conservatives, I don't consider myself Republican, I consider myself conservative.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's going to be a lot of issues that come up there. And I think we're looking at social engineering on a scale that is unprecedented.
What do you mean by that, John? Social engineering is a pretty spooky phrase. You clearly would not welcome it. I don't know who would exactly. When you say that you fear that from an Obama administration, what is it exactly that that means?
Our country has not always demonstrated the values that we profess, but I think we are founded on them, and there's a core that's there. And I think the next 24 months are going to be really interesting to see whether that core remains intact or we go in a completely different direction as to what our base values are.
Deb Peters, how do you look at it? You're a registered Republican, but pretty independent-minded. You voted for McCain. Do you see core American values at risk of being, destroyed or strengthened? Here we are. It's the day after the day after.
Well, I think that's pretty much... I agree with John on some points, but I feel that I don't think the president of the United States or the president-elect is going to go in and say, okay, America, you have to accept my social views and my values. So we wouldn't be America if that actually happened. So I'm hoping that that stays out of it and that they get right to work on the economy.
How did it break down in your household? We'll look at the economy, Deb, but I think you went McCain. You've got a couple of daughters. How did they go, and what was that debate like?
Oh, that was fun. Both of my daughters and my new son-in-law voted for Obama. My husband's a conservative Republican. I'm kind of a moderate myself, but tend to lean towards the Republican values. So it was not a very fun month for the debates between my two college graduate daughters and my husband. So I kind of felt like a moderator.
Right, the moderator at the kitchen table.
Yeah, I was kind of the moderator at the kitchen table and in the family room. And it was a little difficult because, you know, everyone was looking at the facts, but no one really knew the big picture. And none of us will know until we see how President-elect Obama is going to manage our country, whether he's going to work through the center, which is my hopes, instead of going far right or far left. So I
want to come back because I know those two daughters also work in your small business, and I know the economy is maybe at the center of your concern as you consider how to cast your vote. But let me go first, if I may, to Suzanne Merkelson at Kobe College. Suzanne, we talked just a couple of weeks ago. Now we've got an outcome. Nobody knew for sure then. What do you make of it? Obama, president-elect? What's your response been, Suzanne?
I'm just incredibly excited, incredibly proud. I think growing up I've grown up, my political consciousness has been shaped by September 11th, by the response to Hurricane Katrina, by the two wars, by this recent, economic crisis. And I've never been able to really feel proud of my country or proud of a politician or excited to really support a politician. I think in the past I've kind of been just felt kind of not really interested in what's going on. And so it's this really incredible new feeling not to want to mock a politician, but really just be excited and feel that he really represents, my values and what I believe in and what I think the future of the country should be.
And when you hear John in Denver out of Ames, Iowa, saying he has concerns about fundamental American values and how Obama may relate to them, he has concerns about social engineering. Do you understand that concern he's got? Or how do you hear that, Suzanne, as a young Obama supporter?
I can understand that. I understand that people have different values and beliefs. But I also feel that for the past 8 years, my values and beliefs have almost been targeted as not being valuable, as not being true beliefs. And I don't know, I guess receiving this kind of label that at least like Sarah Palin seemed to foster in that my part of the country or where I'm from isn't real America. That was kind of that was hurtful in many ways. And I'm happy. I feel like as though now the kind of values that hopefully will come out of this will be of maybe uniting the United States rather than dividing it.
Brad Thompson, here we are. We've got two McCain voters, two Obama voters, good people all. And you hear the some of the concerns coming out, let's say, from John Shepler's corner. What do you say in response, Brad? You've been a very strong Obama supporter. Can John sleep easy, or do you think that we'll talk more about it, but maybe, you know, some core American values that he holds dear, do you see them threatened here, or something else, Brad?
Well, I think it's important that his point of view be heard. At 60 years old, clearly I've heard social engineering. I heard it during the process of desegregation in the South and the fears that it brought to people's mind during that time. But this is working out better for America. And we need to acknowledge that our traditional values, even our founding values, excluded many Americans. Now we're embarking on a journey that requires all of us to work together. We're facing problems with our economy and with our position in the world that require not only that we give it our best effort, but we search America for our best ideas. So I think we must pull together, like Senator McCain said in his what I thought was a very eloquent concession speech. I really just hope we can all kind of embrace the new possibilities of America where everybody works to make America stronger. And I think that's what this possibility holds for us right now.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with American voters who joined us in the long campaign season to ask what they think the country has just wrought with the election of Barack Obama. John Shepler of Iowa joins us today from Denver. Deb Peters in Indianapolis, Indiana. Suzanne Merkelson is here from Waterville, Maine and Colby College. And from Raleigh, North Carolina, we're joined by Brad Thompson. Brad Thompson just complimented John McCain on his concession speech in Phoenix on Tuesday night. Let's listen to a little bit of that. He called Barack Obama my president, and John McCain asked his supporters to support Obama for the good of the nation.
I urge all Americans who supported me to join me in not just congratulating him, but offering our next president our goodwill and earnest effort to find ways to come together, to find the necessary compromises to bridge our differences and help restore our prosperity, defend our security in a dangerous world, and leave our children and grandchildren a stronger, better country than we inherited.
There were boos a little bit in that hall as well. We'll think about that. But there, John McCain, indeed, very gracious in Phoenix. Barack Obama in Chicago Tuesday night with his outreach to those who may not have voted for him, said he would be president of all Americans, not just Democrats and not just his supporters.
As Lincoln said to a nation far more divided than ours, we are not enemies, but friends. Though passion may have strained, it must not break our bonds of affection. And to those Americans whose support I have yet to earn, I may not have won your vote tonight, but I hear your voices. I need your help, and I will be your president too.
I will be your president too. Barack Obama promising in Chicago on Tuesday night. Let's begin to bring listeners in to join the citizens who have been with us these months along the campaign trail. Suzanne is calling from Longmeadow, Massachusetts. Suzanne, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I live in a conservative community, and thankfully Barack Obama was elected. A few months down the road from me yesterday, there was a black church which was burned down, and I've been thinking since Obama has been elected that if there's going to be any kind of a backlash, we had the civil rights movement. There was so much horror before that toward the black people, and at this point, you know, I'm hearing stories about neo-Nazis and skinheads and even people who are afraid that Mr. Obama is going to be attacked you know, to be killed.
And you had a black church burnt down just miles down the road from your house since the Obama election. Let us go straight at the race question, Suzanne, and thank you for raising it. John Shepler, let me come first to you. There's so many issues here, but let's deal with this one first. We now have an African-American president. It has never, ever happened before. Just in racial terms, how do you look at that in your community? Is that an issue? Is it a point of pride? In your faith community, even. Is there a reaction to the race of this president? Does it matter, John?
Not for me. Not for me personally at all in any way, shape, or form. The country was ready, and I think it has a very strong possibility of being a unifying point, and that maybe some things of the past can be laid aside finally. That's yet to be determined, and that would be my hope. I want to go back a little bit to a couple of words that were used. I don't believe in divisiveness. I don't believe in factions. I think there's as many nuts on the far right as there are on the far left. I think we all have to have dialogues and we all have to talk. And Huckabee said something that I believe in. You know, I'm a conservative, but I'm not angry about it. You know, I don't want to shut out other points of view. Mike Huckabee and Bill Maher had a great conversation the other night. Two radically opposed views. But you know what? At the end, they came together, and they were smiling, and they were talking. And I think that's what we need to do in this country, is open our hearts, open our minds, and talk to each other.
What did you think, then, of Sarah Palin on the home stretch of the GOP campaign trail? There were some kind of angry-sounding rallies there, Republican and angry about it, it sounded sometime, to me anyway, but did it to you?
Absolutely, and I totally disagreed with that. I didn't know if that was something that was being promoted by the people who were organizing those, or whether this was a free-form people coming and feeling like that was the appropriate way to express their views. But it was something that, frankly, embarrassed me.
Brad Thompson, where do you see us going on the question of race with an African-American president, this African-American president, headed into the White House? Our caller has some concern about backlash. Do you see that, fear that, or do you expect something else to emerge from this new American experience?
Well, let's face it. Tuesday was a great day for all of America, and the election of Barack Obama has significance far beyond his heritage. Now, I must tell you, I'm really proud of his election as a black man, but it really gives me greater pleasure to know that we have the possibility of setting this country on a better course, one that might work, one that might bring a better potential, not so much for me, but for my children and my children's children. There's a lot of work that has to be done here. And the election of one man, black, white, or otherwise, does not eradicate those things that we need to work on to make this a stronger country. Nor will it change the minds of some of the citizens that have extremist views. It won't do that. What it does, I believe, is to bring back some sense of hope that this America that we all share, that we all are citizens of, and that we all believe in, will be true to its creed, and that we will collectively seek to live up to the potential that this country provides to everybody who lives here. That's where I think we are, and I think Barack Obama has that a possibility.
That is an inspiring perspective. Deb Peters, you're in a very interesting state in Indiana, voted Democratic in the presidential election this time for the first time in a very, very long time. And its vote internally kind of divided between rural and urban, with the area around Chicago, maybe around Indianapolis, tending much more toward Barack Obama. Areas of more color went for Barack Obama, though certainly not strictly along racial lines by any means. But how do you see the racial issue in the vote and in Obama's presidency, Deb? Did that ever come into your kitchen table conversation?
No, not really. It wasn't ever based on color, because I think we all know that President-elect Obama has a white mother, so I see him as biracial. And color, we should be colorblind here in the United States anyways. And if we're not already, we should be working harder to be colorblind. So from my standpoint, I understand exactly, though, what we were talking about earlier on with Brad. He has great pride that, you know, President-elect Obama was elected because, you know, he's black and he could relate. I, on the other hand, was doing the same thing, but as a woman, I was anxious to see Sarah Palin as a vice president, to have a first woman vice president. So that was a pride to me, too. So I don't really think it's about color. I think it's about who we can relate with. And so, you know, with my children, they didn't see him as a black man. They saw Obama as a leader. And I hope as Americans that we do come together and we quit this. You're black. I'm white. You're Hispanic. You know, it's silly. We're Americans. And I truly believe that we should be seeing it that way. And maybe that's why in Marion County and, like you said, in the northwest corner of Indiana, they went all that way. I think it was because they could relate. Not necessarily because it was 90% black people, but, you know, the women, I could relate to Sarah Palin, so I voted for Sarah Palin and John McCain. So I think it's more about relating with the candidate and feeling good about it. And plus, they felt that he would be better as far as a change. And I can understand why they're proud, and I would be too. And if Sarah Palin was in, I would be proud of that as well.
We'll come to that. Suzanne, you're 21. You're our youngest guest here today who we brought back from the campaign trail. You, in one of the first elections of your voting life, now have an African-American president. Do you expect in your lifetime that this will become routine? Do you see something extraordinary here? Do you think, in fact, we're moving past some of that racial history that you hear your fellow guests hoping we're moving past or not? How do you see it, Suzanne?
I think from the very beginning, at least, Obama was kind of presented as this candidate who transcended race. And I kind of always saw it as that way. I didn't really – growing up in my corner of the country, you know, past the civil rights era, for me, race has never really been something that I've considered tremendously. And I think it's only more recently that his race was made a big deal out of. And I hope it's not just a symbol. I hope it's not just, oh, we finally elected a black person, so now let's bring in, you know, some more white men. I hope that it turns into a pattern of electing the person who's best for the job and not necessarily the person who symbolizes something for us. Although that is powerful, too.
Let's take a call from Fort Myers, Florida, and Jeff. Hi, Jeff. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you for taking the call, Tom. I appreciate it. I have basically two quick comments to make on this election. First of all, I just retired from the military after 20 years of active service in the infantry.
Thank you.
I've been in three armed conflicts. And I'm proud to see that the civilian world is kind of catching up with the military in the world in the fact that race and sex doesn't seem to make as big a difference, and I'm really proud of that as far as my country's concerned. But one thing that does concern me in my country with this election is to hear young people say that, well, they've never been proud of their country. You know, as a soldier, have been all over the world and participated in things that I have had to for our country, and to see the things that we're willing to do and the men and women that are willing to lay down their lives for us, and say that somebody's not proud of us when we're the ones that respond to every emergency that ever comes down the pike. That hurts me as an American, and to see a generation growing up like that. And secondly, to see people, they seem to be in this election, it's not like John F. Kennedy said, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. I've seen news clips of people saying, I'm going to vote for Obama because he's going to make it so I don't have to pay my bills and he'll save my house. You know, what about our generations before this, the Great Depression our parents lived through, where they came out of it stronger and they worked harder and they had this incredible work ethic? Now that was a depression. Now we have a recession going on, and people are voting for a president to save their houses, but not going out and getting second and third jobs to save their houses. And
of course, they could be doing both, I guess. And John McCain also made a big point of saying he would push for saving houses. But you raise a great point, and stick with us, Jeff, because I want to bring this to Suzanne. Suzanne, this has come up in a couple of conversations here. People saying, either this is the first time they were proud of their country, or they've never been prouder than now. But your comment leaned more toward the former there. And it's not the first time we've had this response. And it often has come from military-related folks saying, wait a minute. You know, we've been out here busting our humps, and you haven't been proud of our country. I wish you'd elaborate, maybe to Jeff, Suzanne. What do you mean when you say you're proud for the first time?
Yeah, I'd like to clarify. First of all, I am incredibly proud of our troops. I'm incredibly thankful of what they're doing out there, and I can't even begin to understand what it's like and the sacrifice that they and their families are putting in. I think that's just remarkable and deserves to be applauded, you know, no matter what the circumstance, no matter what the war. I guess what I'd like to say is not that I've never had pride in my country, but maybe pride in politicians. I think that our generation has been brought up with not necessarily the kind of politicians that you can be proud of, both Democrat and Republican. And, so I would like to – and in terms of his second point about, you know, Obama – people voting for Obama to evade maybe something and maybe to make things easier for them, maybe some people think that way. But I think that this is a really great potential to kind of have maybe a second kind of New Deal, like maybe looking into – greener policies. Hopefully Obama can kind of shepherd something like that in, because I think what this country really needs is a lot of innovation in that way, and that's kind of what is going to pull us out of this particular economic situation.
Jeff in Fort Myers, thank you very much for your call. Is it John?
Yeah, I was just wondering if I could comment
yes,
on that
please.
Real quickly.
Mm-hmm.
These are the kinds of values when I think about it, and I thought Jeff brought up a great point. I remember in school that we were taught the value of our country and to respect our flag and to respect our system. And I think we've lost some fundamental things there. And when you talk about big words like social engineering, Department of Education and what our mandates are to teach our children and the ability to instill that sense of a country and baseline pride, I think those are the kinds of things that I worry about. I worry about for my grandchildren who are yet to be born. My daughter's sitting here with me, so mm-hmm. I'm giving her a little hint here.
Hi to her.
But those are the kinds of things that I'm talking about when I express my concerns, that do we as a government, do we as a people value the things that have carried us over the past couple hundred years, and are we willing to do the tough things to carry those things forward?
And what do you say to those voters who this week are saying their baseline pride is swelling because of Obama's election, John?
I have a pride in this as well. I mean, I think this is significant. And you know, like, I have a lot of friends, young, old, different belief systems, different races. I mean, Brad sounds like a guy I'd love to sit down and talk to and have a really in-depth conversation, as well are Deb and Susan. But what I say to our country is that we cannot lose sight of where we've been, because if we don't have a past, we will not have a future. And there are fundamental, basic things that have brought us to this point, and we cannot lose sight of that. I think government in its entirety is broken. We have a system that does not meet the needs of our modern world. And I think both parties, the government in total, needs to figure out how we carry this thing into the next millennium. How do we survive for the next 200 years?
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're joined this hour by American voters who joined us in the long campaign season to talk about Tuesday's big vote and what they see coming now. Brad Thompson in Raleigh, North Carolina, Suzanne Merkelson in Waterville, Maine, Obama voters, Deb Peters in Indianapolis, Tens Independent voted this time for John McCain, liked Sarah Palin a lot. John Shepler of Ames, Iowa, joining us today from Denver, Colorado, with his lovely daughter there, voted for John McCain. Let's go to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and Jim. Hi, Jim. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Sure. I voted for McCain primarily because I was more comfortable with his position on national security, and I'm very much a pro-life person.
Okay.
So those were important issues to me, but the economy is also very important to me. So I just wanted to say that you know, this moment in time and the election of a black a man as president is not lost on me. What a glorious time for this country, and I think it's way, way overdue. But I do hope that as I pray for him and support him now, that he will be able to use his beautiful charisma, his intelligence to channel change for good for the country. And I'm a very practical kind of person. This may sound terribly old school, but I'm kind of like I come from South Carolina, and I have a favorite football team here. I won't go into that, but I don't get enamored of football coaches and their personalities and are they charming and wonderful. I may like them, but at the end of the day, what I want to know, and you know what I'm going to say, is can they win football games? So if I translate that over to my president, what I would say is, when the euphoria of this magnificent moment in time has died away or died down, and we are in a year out, or we're in the dog days of summer, and the fires of this mantle of presidency have firmly settled on his shoulders, I'll be watching, and I think the world will be watching, and I'm pulling for him. But we shall see what we'll see.
Jim, you're very eloquent with it there. You're as gracious as John McCain, and maybe more so. And there's the question. When the euphoria passes, and you're big enough to share in it right there, can he deliver Brad Thompson? What do you say to our caller from Myrtle Beach?
Well, I think he's on the right track. It's so good to hear these positive voices, because it will take us, as I said earlier, us all working together. And I don't know why I'm recalling so many of John McCain's words these days, but I do know that one thing he indicated was that this nation's greatest assets were its workers.
Yes.
And I do believe that that we are prepared to do the work necessary to build this country stronger. Whether you're Republican or a Democrat, it really doesn't matter. All of us want to live in a place that's safe, that has opportunities, where people get along. And regardless of our persuasion, we have fundamental beliefs that we're going to hold on to, our core values, as was said earlier. But at the same time, we're in this mix together. And it just would behoove us, as people who are concerned about this country, to commit ourselves to a path of making it better. And I think that we are willing to do that. All of us want that. Well, we want security, we want a better life for our family, and we want to live in a country that has economic opportunity for us all. Well, we can do that.
Brad, let's see if we can surface some of the questions or tensions that may lie inside that equation. I think it was, Deb, you were saying that you want to be sure we keep the fundamentals that have brought us here. Or was it John?
That was me.
It was you, John. Yeah. Now, I took you in part there. Somehow I heard within those words something about economics and incentives and motivation. Deb, I know you've said, before we talked here today, you have said that you're worried about America becoming more like Europe. Let me, Deb, if I may, put that, your own words to you. What did you mean by that? And does it relate to this issue of fundamentals that have brought us here?
Well, it does relate to, like John, on fundamentals that have brought us here, from the standpoint that in America, you could be anything you want to be. A African-American president, perchance. But
first time for that, but it's
hard.
Pretty big proof point. Yep.
Yeah. You have to work hard. And I see that as a strong value of Americans, that we've always had to work hard. We had to sacrifice. We had to take risk and do whatever it took to put the country first.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sounding like McCain. I apologize.
No,
but
not?
The thing that I would come back to is when John was talking about school, and with me being over 50, you know, we always started with the Pledge of Allegiance every day, and we put our hand on our heart, we looked at the flag, and then there would be a prayer in the morning, and then, you know, the bell would ring and we'd go to classes. And you know, today's society, it doesn't seem to be that. It doesn't seem to be about hard work for the new generation. And I don't think anything bad came out of us as the generation that I'm in, the baby boomers, where we were taught hard work, persistence, being honest and truthful, and it would get us where we needed to do, but we had to rely on ourselves. In Europe, for example, and I don't know if I used Europe as example or maybe outside the USA, but I don't think we should be taking siestas in the middle of the day and sleeping. And maybe that's more Mexico or maybe Spain, but I just think that we need to work harder, and we shouldn't rely on others to come take care of us like France did when it came to World War II, and then to turn around and then actually badmouth us for, you know, standing up to fight for what we believed in.
Deb, I want to turn to Suzanne with that, but let me just ask you first. Now, it has surely not escaped your notice that a few of those countries out there outside the United States, China, India, where they may even take a siesta now and then, are kind of eating our lunch on a lot of fronts. I mean, there's a lot of hardworking people in this world. You no doubt have noticed.
Oh, I noticed that. Anyway. Maybe that was not maybe I made a very bad point there.
I don't know if it's bad, but I want to go to Suzanne. You're our 21-year-old voter. You are this future generation. And you hear the concern in Deb's observations that somehow something maybe about the road Obama may lead us down has less to do with hard work, sacrifice, risk-taking, persistence. What do you think of that fear, Suzanne?
I guess I can understand that fear. I mean, I was brought up also saying the Pledge of Allegiance every day before school. We didn't pray before class, but we definitely said the Pledge of Allegiance.
You were in the generation when it came back into prevalence everywhere, right?
I guess so, yeah. And I was taught to respect our country, but I was also taught to question our history and question what it took to get us here. And I mean, right now I'm learning about how, you know, China is financing our consumption binge. And I think that that's something that my generation is going to have to pay for, you know, this kind of overspending that we've done. And I know that, like, my parents have worked so hard to get me where I am, but I know that I'm going to also have to work really hard to kind of get our country back on track, and I'm ready to do that. And I think that most of my friends understand that and are ready to do that.
A lot of young voters came out for Obama. Do you think your generation has got something against risk-taking, hard work, sacrifice, Suzanne?
No, I would say I think that Obama represents all of those ideals as well.
I mean, clearly, John Shepler, you've got a president here who lifted himself up by his bootstraps an awfully long way. I mean, it's kind of the classic, you know, up by the bootstraps American story. Why do you still pause over it?
To answer your question directly, because I think it's an incomplete story that we don't know everything about it that we should. But
all the way to the presidency, though, from a kid with, you know, who barely had a father around, whose mom didn't have, was by no means, you know, rich, raised by his grand. I mean, it is kind of that up from not much story, isn't it?
Absolutely. Mm. But let's go back to this economy question. I don't think it's a generational thing, because I'll give you an example of exactly how I'm going to be demotivized under certain policies. I own a small business. I employ about 20 people. I provide health insurance for those people. Mm-hmm. I do my level best every day to get up and take care of those people and provide them a place to work. If taxes go in the direction that some people are talking about and nationalized health care goes in that direction, I feel personally I'm going to be disincentivized to offer health insurance, go to the government, let them provide it. I'm going to be disincentivized to make more than a certain amount of money, because at some point it's going to basically be taken and used for something that I might not agree with. Now, we live in a society that we are called to be submissive to the government and to our authorities, and it's a word that we don't like very much, but it is a word that's very valid. The problem is that the more we let government do for us, the less we're going to do for ourselves, and that is not a generational question. That is a societal question.
Let me ask you about those, though. I mean, maybe you just plain didn't believe Barack Obama, but of course, you know, he says on taxes, if you make $200 or less, you're going to get a break, and you won't pay more in taxes unless you pay over $250. On health care, he says that he would actually help employers, come in and make it more possible. Not nationalized health care, but actually, as I recall, offer some subsidies to help you keep offering health care. Did you not believe him on those fronts? Does that, you know, and on submissive? I mean, we've had progressive taxation in this country for a long time. Does it really sound like submitting to a tyrant if those that have more pay more?
There's nothing wrong with if you have been blessed and you have more, then you should give more, and you should do that not only of your finances but of your personal being and your time and everything else. And I totally believe that. But at some point, you have to look at human nature, and you have to look at what the realities of social programming is. And we go back on welfare, you look at food stamps, we look at a lot of these programs. They did not have the ultimate outcome that were envisioned when they were first put in place. What they did was de-incentivize a lot of people to go out and pull themselves up by their bootstraps. Like, why should I work if I can get this for free? And unfortunately, Barney Frank says that number of 250 is way too high. It's more like 120. Well, is it really 80? Is it really 70? You know, where is it? You know, nobody knows where those numbers are. Nobody knows how a nationalized healthcare program will really play out in the end. And honestly, I don't believe that you can have it both ways.
Do you think the economy's been working out well in recent years under, you know, George W. Bush?
Human nature has shown its head, and even Alan Greenspan basically said, I didn't account for human nature. And I think that's the thing that we have to not overlook in this process, is that everybody from the president on down is a human being, and they are going to respond to certain stimuli, and at their core, they're going to have a vested interest. Now, how that displays itself, we don't know.
Brad Thompson, how do you hear this concern about an Obama era being a handout era?
Well, let me first of all say that I think this equation has to be balanced. All this discussion about, you know, those folks who are, you know, pay my bills and save my house. I've been working at this a long time. I haven't heard a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
But what I am aware of is that this has to be a balanced discussion. The reality is that we've been faced with clear corporate greed. Mm-hmm. That we've been faced with Wall Street exploitation, and I don't know how you can lay all this at the feet of people who work hard every day, who are working at wages that have deteriorated in terms of their capacity to give them the ability to afford health insurance or to guarantee a retirement that for those who work like I have, those things were almost assured. Many people find themselves working more and more hours for less and less ability to be able to provide security for themselves. At the same time that we hear over and over again cases of not individual greed, but corporate greed and Wall Street exploitation. If we're going to have a balanced discussion of this, that capacity also has to be included. And what I've heard, Barack Obama said, unlike, I think Suzanne said it great, she was on point, if I could use a pun, it's not the country that she's been unproud of. She's proud of the country, but she's been not so proud of politicians, people whose personal behavior or outright lies, it appears, to the general population has made us be queasy about believing them. That's what Barack Obama brings that's different. He's a believable politician. The words that he says, I believe he will do his best with our support of trying to do. So I'm a businessman just like you are, and the reality is that I have people that I have to pay every day. Not many, but six.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And those people, I believe, will have a better opportunity under a President Barack Obama than they have had in the past. And ultimately, if they are stronger, my business is stronger.
Deb Peters in Indianapolis, are you prepared to put your trust in this new president? You didn't put your vote into his category, but at this point, your trust, your support.
I will always respect the office of the President of the United States. And no matter whether it's Democrat, Republican, Independent, it's President-elect Obama. I have never liked the social views of the media. from calling Mr. Bush all the time on the TV or radio or Mr. Clinton. It was always president to me, whether I vote for him or not. I hope that he does a great job. I hope he does help the environment. But I also want to say that some of the points I was making is I hope there's going to be a lot of hard work and individual responsibility for that, because I have 32 people relying on me to pay their paychecks each week and make sure that I get them health insurance as well. And so the point I was trying to make is I think we should all work a little harder and work together.
I'm for that. Suzanne Merkelson, let us go out with you. You're our youngin' here. You're optimistic? Why? Give us your vision.
I'm totally optimistic, and not only just because of Obama and his message and his policies, but also just what I think he inspires in other people. I've never really seen such conviction among like my friends, my peers, and I think that's hopefully will be indicative of his presidency.
We'll go out on that note, and we thank you all. Suzanne, Brad, Deb, John, thanks very much for being with us this year and today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.